This is Sunday Extra through till 10. Jonathan Green with you. Now, the NSA, PRISM, read a lot about the Obama administration's extraordinary electronic surveillance operation, gathering the phone, internet data of millions of people. It's come as something of a global shock. Australians have been caught in this US-based web of revelation and electronic intrusion. But are our domestic agencies any more polite than the monolithic agencies of the United States? Are Australians caught in this security sweep? What liberties could our own government be taking? Joining us now is West Australian Senator Scott Ludlam. Senator, welcome.
Good morning.
Are we Australians happily oblivious of the liberties that some of our government agencies are taking?
I think we might have been a week or so ago. I think that's all changed, really. There's been quite a substantial outcry in Australia, as there has been around the world, since these revelations broke the surface.
And you've been driving the conversation too in the estimates process in the Senate?
Well, just for a change, I feel like I haven't had to. But yeah, these are issues that I've been pursuing for a couple of years. The Attorney General's Department has this peculiar obsession with data retention, with trapping and storing material not just of suspected criminals, but of everybody. I guess I've had some suspicions for some time that is linked with the larger agenda that we're seeing exposed in the United States.
And we talk a lot too in this country, or did in years past, about internet filters and the like, but again, this is one of the small revelations of the extent to which Australian agencies are capable of blocking various sites, of effectively filtering the web.
Yeah, again, since about 2009, the Australian government's had this rather peculiar obsession with filtering the net. We thought we had that one effectively locked away in the sense that the proposal had been very much downgraded from where Senator Conroy started with. But in the last budget estimates around a fortnight or so ago, it looks as though there's at least three agencies who are now filtering the internet. One of them is an intelligence agency, and they won't reveal which one, what material it filters, what due process surrounds that. And they weren't able to tell us how many agencies are authorised to do such filtering. So we're in a bit of a bad place with that proposal again.
So where does that obstruction come from? I mean, here we have, you know, yourself, a senator of this fair Commonwealth. We have the committees of the Australian Senate interrogating various departments and agencies, but there are brick walls around some of these bits of information.
Since September 11, and clearly not just in Australia, but in Western democracies, there's been a very strong drive to subordinate Parliament's accountability and transparency processes to the security and intelligence agencies. And that has thrown up quite a powerful wall of secrecy around these agencies. At the same time as their budgets have been shooting up, we know less and less about what it is that they actually do. Obviously, in the United States, that's gone right down the rabbit hole. But in Australia, we're not too far behind.
And what agencies in particular, you say that they're obscure about their activities and precisely, but we assume that agencies like ASIO are actively involved in this sort of area?
I don't think there's any doubt about that at all. Obviously, it operates here in Australia on a much smaller scale, and the United States sets the template for surveillance overreach in a way that I think surprised even people who work on this stuff for a living. In Australia, because we are seen as something of a client state for the United States, there's a degree of paranoia here that is actually quite counterproductive. So one example is that the security agencies in Australia are exempt from freedom of information laws. Now, even the CIA in the US isn't exempt from freedom of information. But in Australia, you can't even FOI how many paper clips they used last year. It's that kind of paranoia.
Is there any sense of any political will to readjust that balance? I mean, you speak about the post-9/11 environment. Are things changing to the point where we might be able to begin to re-regulate information to allow the intrusion of the Australian Parliament, for example?
Look, I really hope so. And if anything good comes from clearly the personal sacrifice made by this extraordinary young whistleblower who's found himself now in Hong Kong, it might be that with the curtains down somewhat, people can see what's being done can see how remarkably anti-democratic some of these powers and the mindset that goes with them, that there might be time for some slippage. We'll be in a position to test that next week and see whether it's just the Greens that have these concerns. So we've got a number of things that we'll be trying next week in Parliament to get some transparency and to put a proposal forward that agencies in Australia should get a warrant rather than just rubber stamping their own internal paperwork before they can access this sort of material on Australians.
It doesn't seem an unreasonable expectation, Scott.
Well, ask me again in a week.
We will, and we will watch with interest those events in our Parliament this coming week. West Australian Greens Senator Scott Ludlam has joined you. Scott, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
So, look, let's take this from another angle. Dr. Marcus Breen is a Professor of Communication and Media at Bond University. He's the author of Uprising, The Internet's Unintended Consequences. Marcus, welcome.
Thank you. Hi, welcome to me.
The internet, is it the natural enemy of privacy?
I suspect that it probably is. I think that the great claims that have been made that the internet will allow information and, in some ways, knowledge to be free and to circulate uninhibited is also, unfortunately, its opposite. It creates enormous opportunities and enormous risks, and I think we're seeing that quite clearly now.
And yet we don't seem quite prepared for that duality, do we? We're uncertain as yet of the full impact of the moving of our lives online.
No, I think you're absolutely right. We're not keen on reducing our emancipation in any way, shape or form. And in fact, our socialisation has very much been around communication technologies that, as I said, give us more freedom. That information not only wants to be free, but we as sentient beings want to be free or emancipated along with us. And this is a great, deep, philosophical current that runs through human nature, if you like, and we've been told that if we just get online, we'll have everything at our fingertips, and then, whoops, there actually are a few things that we would not want at our fingertips.
Is that because we're a step behind the technology, that our we don't have an appropriate understanding or approach to it, that the technology makes certain things possible that we're a little bit ill-equipped to conceptualise or deal with?
That would be one explanation. The other explanation is that for colleagues of mine in the critical and communication field, there's been a long-standing view that technology always produces its opposite. And this is definitely the case with communication technologies and the internet. And if you look at the work of a guy like Michael Addis, ADAS, you'll see almost hysterical anxiety about the amount of control, centralisation, manipulation and uncivil behaviour on the part of not only business but government that really represents a true nightmare. And there's a long history of the study of technology that knows a lot about this, but what happens, of course, is that the technology is also run by people who are extraordinarily good business people and know that technology and marketing go together like love and marriage, I suppose. And so they do it very well. And they tell us how absolutely crucial to our well-being and to our common sense, if you like, and to our humanity are all the new technologies. And so they're bundled together in such a way that they just zoom ahead. And the history of technology is also the history of law and regulation seeking to catch up with it.
And yet in this instance, this is a technology which in some senses surpasses much that has come before it, that it has something of a life of its own. It is not being directed or controlled by those interests that you refer to there.
No, it's difficult to know where something very abstract like that starts and finishes. Clearly it has a real materiality, clearly there are people who are making decisions about algorithms and about mathematical calculations that bring us all this data over the network. But I think that there's a fair bit of rationality behind it. But it's way out there in the ether, as it were, in terms of getting a grip on what it really means to us in terms of day-to-day life.
And what's important to us in terms of day-to-day life is, I think, that notion of a private self. That's a very fundamental human idea. To lose that would be extremely dislocating.
Well, the private only exists in relation to the social. We're social animals, primarily, and yet we've been engaged in a reasonably short term, and I'm saying short term, say, since the Industrial Revolution, of seeing privacy really come into its own. The development of private property, the development of property rights, the development of the home, the family home, suburban family life, and then technologies and communication technologies that then helped us to be more and more private and to circumvent, if you like, conventional face-to-face sociality. So that's been an important part, and I think if you look at the history of technology and communication technologies, you'll see this slow but steady advance towards increasing privatisation and increasing privatism, as I call it. Mm. And the internet, I think, is taking that to a very big extreme, where we can be very comfortably isolated from the conventional sociality, and that's a huge shift in human development, if you like.
It's isolated and yet simultaneously exposed, which is an interesting contradiction at this moment.
It is, and there are many of those in thinking about and theorising the internet, which is what we have to do more radically and more dramatically as these challenges, as suggested by the NSA and privacy issues, have emerged. These things are just getting bigger and bigger.
Thank you so much for your time this morning.
You're welcome.
Dr. Marcus Breen, he's Professor of Communication and Media at Bond University.